Ladies and gentlemen, we are now beginning the conference call. If you get disconnected during the call, please call 1-888-409-6709. Again, the number to get reconnected is 1-888-409-6709. At this time, your line is muted and will continue to remain muted during the duration of the call. To ask a question or if you have a comment, please press star 1. If at any time during the conference you need assistance, please press star 0. I would now like to introduce Dr. Joanne Carter, Executive Director of Resolve, located in Washington, D.C., to open the call.
Thanks a lot, Operator, and welcome everyone to the Results December 2014 call focused on domestic poverty issues. So first of all, happy holidays to everyone, and it's great to be with you for this end-of-the-year call together. And this call is really meant to be both a celebration of what you've accomplished, of what we've accomplished together, and also a call to action for our continued critical leadership on the issues we're fighting for, and also your leadership in creating champions in Congress, and also working to turn opponents to allies, because they're going to be absolutely essential for our 15. Just a quick reminder that you can download the PowerPoint slides for today's call in the if you just go to the Take Action box, top right-hand corner in the results homepage. So I want to start by acknowledging really your remarkable work in 2014. So if you turn to slide 3, you can see that results of volunteers working on domestic issues have spoken face-to-face with at least 121 meetings with members of Congress. That's 90 representative meetings face-to-face, 31 Senate meetings with senators face-to-face. And that's along with hundreds of other meetings with congressional staff. And just for some perspective, that's nearly 40 more meetings than you had in 2013, and it's a record for our U.S. poverty advocates. And I just was thinking, it's quite remarkable, and that there are lobbying firms in Washington that would pay tens of millions of dollars to make that happen, and frankly with less impact because it wouldn't be informed constituents that are making long-time relationships. Just a few things to note on that. You know, first and foremost is just huge acknowledgement of your dogged persistence, because that many meetings do not happen without asking and asking again and following up again. But I also want to say you were really smart in using town hall meetings. So many folks use town hall meetings as ways to reach members that were hard to get direct face-to-faces in their office. And that was really smart in an election year. But I think we need to learn from that and continue to use that even into 2015, and obviously going forward into 2016, which is an election year again. And I'd also say that our expansion into a number of smaller states where it's somewhat easier to get to reach your senators has also really paid off. But again, that's only because the folks in those states also did a brilliant job of reaching out to their senators and getting those meetings. So they had the opportunity and they took it. If you look at slide 4, again, I want to just acknowledge, overall, we've generated at least, that we know of, 119 pieces of media to support our U.S. poverty campaign work. That includes 96 letters to the editor, 17 op-eds, and half a dozen articles and radio spots. And I would really point out that aside from the articles, the news articles that have covered the earned income tax credit and the child tax credit when they were really a sort of peak action in Congress, most of the coverage on those issues, the letters on those issues, have come from you all. So, again, it's a remarkable piece of work. And I just heard recently, again in the last week, from Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio how important your work on the earned income tax credit and the child tax credit is. And as you may know, Senator Brown led efforts to stop a bad tax extenders bill just a few weeks ago because it didn't include the earned income tax credit and the child tax credit extensions. So it's just remembering that even our champions, or maybe especially our champions in Congress, need our support and partnership in this stuff. I also just want to share that very recently the head of Bread for the World has personally reached out to me to say how critical it will be for results to play a continued leadership role in protecting SNAP, what used to be food stamps, in 2015. With the assumption, you know, as he said, if SNAP is in danger of being cut, or more honestly, when that happens, because we know that SNAP will be a target for budget cuts. And what I want to share is that David Beckman reached out to me and said that he thinks we can and should play a really leadership role and be the leading edge when it comes to those moments in a fight to protect SNAP because of the bold and effective role that you have played. So I just wanted you to know that because it's such a clear recognition of the value and importance that you brought to that SNAP effort. So again, just to say congratulations on what you've accomplished, and it's very clear how much we are needed and need to build on this and keep it up for 2015. If you want to go to the next slide, those of you that are following it, it's a sort of segue into Joss's session and taking some shares for you. But I want to point out just the photo there, which is of our great Iowa volunteers and Josh, but also Joss, and also Senator Tom Harkin of Iowa. And I was listening to National Public Radio this morning, and they had a piece on retiring senators, and you heard from Tom Harkin and a number of others, real champions and leaders in the Senate, Tom Harkin, Carl Levin, and key members who really have been some of the biggest fighters for these issues that are, in many cases, retiring, like those guys, or Representative George Miller of California, who's been such a champion, but also others who we know lost in elections. And it's really sad to see many of these champions and allies go. But it also brings me back to the fact of the even greater importance of our role going forward in helping to create new leaders on these issues, because there are holes to fill in Congress on these issues, and I think we can play a very key role in that. And it's about working with our allies and really supporting them to be bolder and braver and take more champion roles with our support. You know, it's making sure their champions know that we're doing everything we can to support them. And then I think it's frankly, I was just in a meeting Tuesday with a fairly new Republican member of Congress, but that conversation that went on for like 45 minutes reminded me again that these folks come to Congress wanting to make a difference, wanting to have a legacy. They often forget it, I mean, because things get busy and crazy. We don't always agree with them on all of the issues or even what they might see as part of their legacy. But I also think mostly people are never having the conversation with them about how can you play a key part in ending poverty and hunger in this country in the next 15 years. And I think we can really come to them with very specific issues that we can make a powerful case for around economic mobility, around protecting the programs that have the biggest impact on hunger in this country, but also, frankly, having that bigger conversation about the difference they can make and the legacy that they could leave. So I want to just end by flagging a few big opportunities that we can take advantage of now and early into the new year. So one, I know many of you are already working on this, but January and February are really key times and great times to get face-to-face meetings with members of Congress back in the districts and set them up right on our priority. And frankly, as we're seeing that a number of these issues are going to come up very quickly early in the year. So setting them up right for the short run, but also for the work that's going to need to happen throughout the year. So reaching out now to get those meetings really key. And I also want to just share and announce that our February 2015 conference call, and this is in the notes in the slides, that our February 2015 conference call will be a joint domestic global call with a very special guest, New York Times columnist and author Nick Kristof, who is the author of A Path Appears, the most recent book, and he's actually been on a book tour. Some of you may even have seen him or been a part of that. But his book, A Path Appears, includes a section about results, but also in the back of the book where it says 6 steps you can take in the next 6 minutes, and these are the sort of summary of things that he says you can do to make a difference. One of those 6 things is be a part of results. So, and Nick Kristof's written extensively not only on solutions to global poverty, but also the critical role of early childhood education and Head Start, about poverty and the need to address racial inequality in America. So I think the February call will be a great outreach opportunity for all of us. And lastly, I'd say please mark your calendars for July 18th to the 21st in 2015 for the Results Conference in Washington, D.C. It is our 35th anniversary, but more important than that, it's a critical year to protect and expand these efforts to end poverty in America. So we want to see you all there. We want to start working with you now, so if there are any barriers to you getting to the conference, we can help you overcome those. because the more of us that are there, the bigger impact that we can have. And really, Leslie, I want to thank you for your financial generosity in supporting results through our annual end-of-year giving appeal and also the amazing fundraisers that a number of you have organized even in just the last few months. So again, congratulations. Thanks for all you're doing. And I'm going to turn the call over to Jocelyn and wish you all a very happy and peaceful holiday. Thanks.
Thanks, Joanne. Good afternoon and morning, everybody. Good to talk to you again this cold December in some places and warm as it is here in Iowa. So as Joanne talked about, as pointing out in the slides earlier on, kind of a slow legislative agenda this year because of the election certainly did not stop all of you from having another great year of grassroots advocacy. And it's your drive and determination and passion that makes this work both inspiring and worthwhile. So what we want to do is take the next few minutes and hear about some of the successes that you've achieved. Hear about some of the successes you've achieved here in 2014. So first I want to go to Daria Flores in San Diego. San Diego had several face-to-face meetings this year. However, as Daria will explain, doing the meeting is only the first step. Without the follow-up afterwards, you don't get the results you want. So let's hear about Daria's story. Daria, are you there?
So if you've ever gotten a congressional runaround, you can identify with my story. But at least this one, spoiler alert, has a happy ending. It started when four of us met with Representative Susan Davis the end of August. Susan is a liberal Democrat, and she usually supports our issues. And we meet with her every year to thank her for past support and update her on what we're up to for the current year. We thought our request would be on to co-sponsor CTC, and we asked her now to co-sponsor the EITC legislation. While she sounded quite positive about it, she said she wanted her staffer to check out the details before she agreed to the action. The staffer would get back to us in the next few weeks. Well, he never did, and there was no response to my follow-up email. Normally, it would have stopped there, but at the end of October, our group arranged for results to be one of the co-sponsors of an event. It was a movie and panel discussion on what it was like for struggling families raising children in America. And it just so happened that Susan Davis was part of the panel. During the question-answer session, I asked her if she could comment on how the CTC could help young children. For some reason, she didn't mention CTC and talked briefly about EITC. Well, this was a great lead-in. So after the panel discussion, my partner Michelle and I went up to her before she left and asked her why nobody got back to us regarding co-sponsoring EITC. Susan seemed genuinely surprised and said a different staffer, one who was present at the event, would check into it right away and get back to me. Then the runaround started again, with me being bounced to the D.C. office and again getting no response. Annoyed, I decided to call the district staffer back, only to be told he was no longer with the congresswoman. I was so exasperated. I told the poor woman answering the phone how frustrated I was. And then she said, "Daria Flores, I know you." She remembered me from Congressman Filner's office when she was a staffer there. I explained the situation to her in detail, and she said she would look into it. Well, the very next day, Brendan from the D.C. office called and said he would talk to Susan first thing when she arrived in D.C. the following morning. He seemed pretty confident that she would co-sponsor and said he would let me know when she did. And the beginning of November, he emailed me that Congresswoman Davis had co-sponsored. "Told you I would get it done," his email read, and there was a happy face at the end. Well, we don't always have successes, but after 2 months and all that effort, we sure enjoyed this one.
Great. Thanks so much, Daria. It's a great story of how being persistent pays off, and we appreciate everything that you and all the other San Diego folks are doing. So now let's go to Lydia Penley in Santa Fe. You know, over the years, Santa Fe has grown into be one of our strongest and most effective groups. And one area of growth for them has been fundraising. You know, originally they were doing small events to raise money for results, but over time have graduated to bigger and more lucrative events. So Lydia is going to share with us about their success and why they for our work. So Lydia, are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Thanks for the opportunity for our group to share about our fundraising. Just a short history and then a few ideas about what has helped us get to this point. Our group has been around since the early 1990s. Our first fundraiser, though, was not until 1998, a Halloween party attended by about 30 people. The goal was to raise $1,000. At the end of the party, we had only 500. Kitty Sherlock, our co-leader, the next day was describing this sadly to a friend who then immediately wrote out a check for the other 500. It took us 6 years to get it together to try another event, this time a luncheon with Marshall Saunders from San Diego as our speaker. His daughter lived in Santa Fe, and we raised about $1,500. Well, another 6 years went by, and we finally got up our courage and did two small brunches in 2010, one in summer and one in the fall, reached a little over 40 people. Our draw for the first brunch was that we served Belgian waffles cooked by the daughter of the founder of the Belgian waffle on the original waffle maker. This time, we raised about $5,000. We had a really good time doing those events and decided we could try for a bigger event the next year instead of 6 years later. So started what is now becoming our signature event, a harvest supper in November with home-cooked soup, salad, bread, and pies. In 2011, we drew 70 people, raised about $11,000. In 2013, 88 came, raising $13,500. In 2013, after that event, we said, well, we can do this every year. So this year's event was a little smaller in attendees, 76, but growing in the number of actual donors, 85, raising at this point $14,800, and we have some little hope that we may, well, I mean, a lot hope that we'll get to actually to $15,000. I want to say that we have really surprised 4 years. We're a small group, and the people we know and invite are not wealthy. What we think has made the difference for us is that first and foremost that we know we are raising money for a critically important cause and a very effective organization. Second, we're having fun and really like working together on this. Third, we are keeping track each year now of whom we invite, who attends, and who gives. We're trying to build each year on a larger base of people who know us, who like the food we serve, and are getting to know our personal commitment to results and the good work that results does in the world. Inviting is really the heart of it. A little scary at first, but the more you do it, the easier it gets. We had 11 of us inviting this year and reached around 300 people. The more we do it in person and the more we follow up from initial email or mailed invitations, the better our success. Also, because people are getting to know us and begin to have their own history of giving to results, pre- and post-event donations from people who cannot attend are increasing. And a fourth point, we're emphasizing becoming monthly donors and are having success with increasing those numbers. Our whole group now wants to give you a last word from our learnings over the years. Just do it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lydia. That was great. Really, Santa Fe's had over the years in fundraising. We appreciate all your efforts. Now I'm going to turn to Charvon Williams. Charvon is a member of our new Indianapolis, Indiana group. And she attended last summer's international conference in Washington, D.C., and also has worked to connect results with the local Circles group in Indianapolis. And she's going to share about how these local partnerships can really make a difference. Charvon, are you there?
Mr. Lynn, I'm sorry we didn't have a participant come in named Charvon Williams, nor anyone dialing from Indianapolis. Charvon,
okay, well, I'm sorry we missed Charvon this time. We'll get her share another time. So then let's go finally to Sarah Miller in St. Louis. And Sarah is one of our Real Change Fellows this year who's taken what she learned from the fellowship and used it to help rebuild the St. Louis group and engage many others in her community in our work. And she's a prime example of how real change is helping create a new generation of powerful and inspiring advocates. Sarah, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yep. Go ahead.
Okay. So my name is Sarah Miller, and I'm a sixth grade social studies teacher and a member of the Results St. Louis group. I'm also a part of the Real Change Fellowship. Last summer, I came to D.C. for the Results Conference as part of Real Change, where I got training and then lobbied my members of Congress. I was totally inspired by my fellow Real Changers and their energy and dedication. I took what I learned from the Real Change Conference back to St. Louis to rebuild the group here. First, I took Carly Pildes' community mapping training to heart to find new allies. We hosted an event for new members to become advocates and they gained the confidence to publish media pieces in the newspaper. I've even taken on the role of group leader. Next year, we hope to meet with our members of Congress and get more letters to the editor published. We just hosted our second outreach and raise awareness event last night where we showed the movie A Place at the Table. It's a powerful movie about hunger and poverty in America. Afterwards, we had people write their own letters to Congress about the issues raised in the film. I have also been using what I learned from Real Change to teach my students about how change is made. I've been able to tell them how I've tried to make change myself and how the process is done. I'm really excited to attend the Real Change retreat in March and bring that experience back to my students again. I value the webinars that Carly puts on to help support us Real Changers. It helps me stay passionate and excited, get additional support, and also know that I'm not alone in the challenges I face. It's been a really great thing to be part of the Real Change Fellowship Program with the support of people around my age and extra training sessions. So if you have anybody on the call who is in their 20s, please encourage them to take advantage of the Real Change Fellowship and apply to be a member of next year's class, because it is definitely worth it.
Thank you so much, Sarah, and thank you for all the wonderful things that you've done as part of the fellowship and helping get, you know, strengthening up St. Louis. Thank you, everybody, who shared today, and we know this is just a small sampling of all the great things that our grassroots network has been doing, and so we, just, again, want to thank you for all the wonderful work you've done in 2014, coming up next year, and we'll look forward to creating even greater success. Sorry about that, Freudian slip. Greater success. When the new Congress comes in. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Meredith, our Director of U.S. Poverty Campaigns, to do a legislative update and talk about our 2015 campaign. Meredith, are you there?
Yes, I am, and that does win the prize for favorite slip on a national conference call in the 16 years I've been on staff with Results. So hi, everyone, and greetings from Ypsilanti, Michigan. So as most folks know, I'm the Director of our U.S. Poverty Campaign work, and I'm typically based in Washington, D.C., but there's a group of folks, the local NAACP chapter here in Ypsilanti is excited about starting a results group, so they brought me out to do a presentation last night, and we're starting our training on Tuesday. So if by any chance you know anyone in the Ypsilanti area, please do let them know we're building up a results presence here in Michigan. So at any rate, let me. I first want to make sure we catch up to speed, and then later on, we're going to talk a bit more about our 2015 campaigns and discuss some of the things that we're considering, some of the strategies, and get your feedback on some of that. So, first of all, to kind of make sure we're all on the same page, as I think many of you know, and Joanne mentioned at the start of our call, there was a deal reached or negotiated with House and Senate leadership, tax extenders legislation. So if you wanted, you can also follow along. I'm at slide 11 at this point. And they negotiated, the House and Senate leader negotiated a deal that would have made a bunch of corporate tax provisions permanent, at least some of the ones, meaning permanently enshrined, adding to the deficit to the tune of $400 billion over the next 10 years. This is quite alarming that they were moving forward with this, and in particular, it was quite alarming that there were so many folks, especially among some Senate Democrats, that were tacitly endorsing this deal. So a lot of folks that, and this is not on paper deliberately, but I want to make sure I'm clear with folks, everyone on this call, there were a lot of senators that we think of as supporters or, you know, really on our side, and we've spent a lot of time working with, to talk about the importance of protecting expiring provisions for the earned income tax credit and child tax credit, that were completely willing to sign off on a deal that was making a bunch of other things permanent while letting those provisions continue to expire in 2017. So it was quite alarming, to say the least. And you can see what's at stake if you look at slide 12, where and when these provisions, if these provisions expire, we're talking about over 16 million people losing, falling into poverty or deeper into poverty. So this is a big deal that's going to impact millions of families if Congress continues to prioritize other things, and that's why your work is so important. So luckily, we did have some leadership step forward, in particular the president step forward and loudly announced that he was going to veto the bill because it was prioritizing tax breaks for corporations over important provisions for low-income working families. And there were two critical allies in the Senate who were speaking up. That was Senator Sherrod Brown and Senator Elizabeth Warren. And then in addition, the other piece that was really critical of why this kind of deal, you know, didn't end up happening is because there were enough House Democrats kind of mobilized by Nancy Pelosi, willing to sustain the president's veto if it did come to his desk and veto. So instead, they're working on a 1-year extension of all the expiring tax provisions. I'm not saying that's a great outcome, but it's certainly nice that they're not doing a bunch of permanent tax breaks. So this is the perfect hook for us to circle back one more time. I know it's crazy with the holidays and everything else, but one of the things that's so unique about results is that policymakers know that we're paying attention and holding them accountable. And I think it's very important, if you haven't done so already, to make sure that your group is coordinating to be in action. So our December action is focused on, and you can see this in slide 13 and 14, circling back to these tax aides in your House and Senate offices, expressing your frustration, your outrage about what almost happened, and reiterating your support for the earned income tax credit and child tax credit. So let's send them a really clear message so that it shapes the debate for next year, and your voices are going to be critical in that. So the kind of mechanics of it is I urge you right after the call or even just right now, if it's something you can do quickly, delegate who's going to call each Senate office and talk to that specific aide, who's going to call each House office and talk to that tax aide. And then the rest of you can reinforce that message by leaving a quick voicemail with the receptionist, kind of saying that you're voicing your support for the EITC and CTC. So maybe I'll pause for 30 seconds to allow folks to just kind of figure that out. Who's going to call each Senate office and talk to that tax aide in the next week? Who's going to call each House office and talk to that tax aide? Great. All right. Well, now I want to pivot on to our 2015 work. Actually, let me mention real fast on slide 15, you can see text you can steal to activate your action network on this as well. So as a reminder, our 2014 work, we rolled out a multi-year campaign really to focus on enacting policies that focused on Americans having the financial means to earn enough income to make ends meet, and then stay on their feet while working to become financially independent, and building the savings and assets to weather financial emergencies and save for the future. So it's kind of a multi-pronged campaign. This was a campaign, a lot of you helped shape it in kind of consultation a year ago, and was approved by our board of directors as our kind of our overarching 2014 campaign work, but also really a multi-year campaign. So the first part of that was protecting and expanding the EITC and CTC. The second was supporting asset building strategies, including the financial, really focused on the financial security credit. And then the third part was addressing the cliff effect. So ultimately on the cliff effect, again, remember the cliff effect is when folks lose access to some of their critical programs and safety net services as they're moving out of poverty and moving up the income scale when they lose it too dramatically. Ultimately, we explored this. Some of you had some great conversations directly with members of Congress, and it's not the right time for us to do a deeper dive on this, both from a policy perspective. It's, you know, this is a problem that goes across different, you know, child care, SNAP, tax policy, et cetera. And in addition, it's also, so it's kind of legislatively certainly complicated. But really the reason why we're not moving forward is the political dangers. That as we talk about the challenges families are facing as they're moving up the income scale, there is a very real possibility or real likelihood that would be used to justify actual deep cuts to some really important programs. So anyway, so that's the focus of, that was kind of an update of our work on cliff effect, and thank you folks for engaging in that. It's something we're still committed to, but the landscape was dangerous to do some serious work on in 2014, and that's certainly true for 2015 too. So there's some lessons learned as we go into next year, regardless of the issues. The first part, and you can see these on slide 18, is expect to be busy. We're going to have a new Congress. I think we're going to see a lot of attempts to roll back the safety net. The EITC and SNAP, formerly known as the food stamp program, are going to be big targets for cuts in budget negotiations and other legislation. The second lesson is, you know, we can't bank on anything. That, you know, we might have thought based on conversations we had that there was a real broad support and priority placed on protecting earned income tax credit and child tax credit provisions for low-income working families, but folks were willing to negotiate that away. So we can't assume anything. The third lesson, and I think we're going to learn this again and again, most likely, is that we need the president to stand firm, and now House Democrats are going to be very important. And let me say candidly, I know many of you have found meetings. I love Daria's story to start us off, by the way, but I know many of you have found meetings with, you know, it's kind of hard to get motivated to work with the minority party in the House because the minority party typically doesn't have a lot of control over things. They don't get to control what's on the House floor, what's moving forward, et cetera. Now, the minority party in the House of Representatives is going to be critically important because the president needs to know and we need to know that there's enough broad support in the House to sustain a veto if there's a bad thing that comes to the president for signature. And then the fourth point is that, you know, the voice of grassroots folks, your work is really critical. So this is not something that a bunch of well-meaning advocates and lobbyists in D.C. can stop. It's really going to take the voices of grassroots folks to make a big difference. And I'll tell you, I get daily emails telling me about what media coverage has been published in the last 24 hours that mention the word earned income tax credit or child tax credit or EITC. And as Joanne mentioned, you know, outside of some of the political blogs, the only time this stuff is getting local attention where local folks are saying, hey, these programs need to be a priority, almost every single op-ed that one of you generated. So the work that you're doing is really critical in being a voice back home. So moving on to slide 19, you can see our kind of campaign proposal subject to the board approval. Just to be clear, as folks are looking at this, we're not talking about big new issues. And the reason why we're not talking about big new issues is primarily because of the level of threats to kind of core programs that exist in this new Congress. You know, if the SNAP program is fundamentally restructured, deeply cut, and restructured in a way that it is not as effective in providing, you know, nutrition assistance for low-income folks, we're kind of stuck with that for 20 years. You know, if they make big changes, roll back access to earned income tax credit and child tax credit, we're not going to be able to undo that 2 years from now. So that's why it's, you know, I know it's not as sexy to be considering a bunch of new issues, but you all have worked so hard to protect and strengthen these programs, and they really do see, we do see some serious threats on the horizon. So our first campaign is going to focus on continuing our economic mobility campaign. So we'll see right over again, perhaps right at the start of the year, Congress looking again at expiring these expiring corporate tax provisions and pushing to make a bunch of corporate tax breaks permanent, and yet while ignoring important provisions for earned income tax credit and child tax credit. So our work on protecting and ultimately strengthening and expanding EITC and CTC is going to be very timely in this new Congress, and it could be very active soon in the new Congress. But the thing that will be different this year is we're going to change our broader framing in the way that we're really kind of thinking about this and engaging in our communities about this. So in particular, what I want to highlight is, you know, I've been thinking a lot about this. I'm sure many of you have been about this, thinking about the kind of society we currently live in and the society we want to live in. Given, as I mentioned, I was speaking to folks with the local NAACP chapter here in Ypsilanti yet last night and again today, part of that is thinking about issues of justice. And many of us have been watching protests and kind of wondering what's going on with our criminal justice system and in terms of racial justice. And I think that kind of really looking at things from a justice angle and a fairness angle, you're going to hear a lot more of that in the way that we're talking about our campaigns. It might not be the messaging we use on Capitol Hill, depending on the office, but, you know, we're really clear, I'm very clear that we need to see some kind of fundamental shifts in the way that government and society works in a fair way to folks across society. You can see there's some of the details that, you know, and some of the data we'll be drawing from in terms of, you know, thinking about racial justice and the racial wealth gap. Many of you remember the fabulous guest we had back on our conference call back in June, Dr. Maya Rockymore, who really focused on the racial wealth gap in a new report they put out at the time at the Center for Global Policy Solutions. You can see some of the data from that on slide 21. You know, the real takeaway from that, from their report, was that the average Black household had 6 cents of wealth for every $1 of wealth that an average white household had. 6 cents of wealth. And there's actually the Pew Research Center just yesterday put out a new brief looking at data that goes all the way to 2013. They found in 2013, the average white household had 13 times as much wealth as the average African-American household. And back in 2010, it was only 8 times. So the racial wealth gap is growing in a way that's really shocking. And part of this is because of the impact of government policies, you know, slavery, the Homestead Act, GI Bill. And then if you look, you know, on slide 22, you can see how fairly current tax policies are subsidizing the wealth gap, or making wealth inequality even worse by rewarding, kind of making folks who have wealth get even wealthier. So that's some of the framing that you'll see of our campaign work on economic mobility, though much of an opportunity to push specific asset building policies like the financial security credit in 2015. The reason why is that Congress is really going to focus primarily on corporate tax reform or corporate tax provisions. They're not going to be doing as much on the individual tax side. So we might not do as much, you know, detailed dig-in work on asset building policies, but certainly we're going to continue and perhaps really up the amount of time, you know, the work that we're doing about wealth inequality and the wealth gap. But our work on this is really going to be focused on these EITC and CTC provisions. Last year, as Daria's share at the start illustrated, one of the techniques we've been using, and I think we'll continue to use, is to build support and build momentum by getting members of Congress to co-sponsor bills as a way to show broad support for protecting and strengthening the EITC and CTC. So expect to continue some work on that with new bills in the new Congress. And in addition, I think we'll see a lot of, and we've already seen a lot of pushback, and we'll have to counter and educate folks on two main areas where we'll get a lot of pushback from some in Congress. The first is around immigration. So the president's administrative action on immigration is kind of tying into the EITC and the child tax credit, and we'll be providing tools to help us help folks, results folks, kind of educate folks about what's at stake and ways that we can provide opportunity for low-income working families, including not taking away access to the EITC and child tax credit for immigrant families. And then the other place we'll continue to see pushback, and this, we've been seeing it a lot in the last couple of days even, is around what some call fraud, but as I think all of you know, is really actually at the error rate in the earned income tax credit and child tax credit. And there's some practical things Congress could actually do to address this, you know, providing more funding and oversight authority for the IRS. But and so we have to kind of push back on that as we're moving forward to address the error rate in the earned income tax credit and child tax credit. So that'll be the focus of our economic mobility campaign work. And then as you can see on slide 23, our second major campaign, so this is going to be back to a major campaign level, is we're calling it Food for Thought, at least right now, focused on protecting nutrition programs. So this will primarily focus on SNAP because that's where I think the biggest threats are, but also on the child nutrition programs, which include WIC and school lunches, school breakfast, summer meals, et cetera, are scheduled for reauthorization next year. I don't think that we're going to push a lot of specific detailed expansion of those child nutrition programs, but we certainly might need to jump in if there's some threats to really take a whack at them or to expand them by taking money from SNAP, which is something Congress did back in 2010. But the other threat to SNAP is that we could see some deep threats to SNAP in the budget process that Congress engages in the spring, kind of late winter, spring, through a process called reconciliation. So that's the overview of kind of the campaign landscape as we see it now and some of the strategies that we're going to use. And then the other piece that we'll continue to do is kind of build on our partnerships with other community networks and across the country. And I think Charvon from Indianapolis is now on the line. Charvon, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Can you give us give us some context of what you all, what's been happening there in Indianapolis as we think about how we're going to partner with folks in our local communities.
Okay, sounds good. Hi, everyone. Sorry that I'm late on the call. So we have results. We have the Global Group, and we also have the Domestic Poverty Group, and we have partnered with Circles. So Circles is a national organization where their goal is to build intentional relationships among classes, meaning middle class, people who are in poverty, to provide them the opportunity and the resources to become self-sufficient and be productive citizens in society. So the way that we all got connected, well, I can just start off from my perspective. I went to the Results International Conference in 2013 as a rail changer, and I first heard about Circles through Carlos. So when I came back here, I started looking if there was a Circles group here, and there are actually several in Indiana. So I became a AmeriCorps member for the Circles at the Julian Center, which is the domestic violence women's shelter that Circles is housed out of. And we partnered together, and then from there, with Results and Circles, it just became this unique partnership. It became full circle, if that makes sense. And this past year at the conference, we actually had three Circle leaders who were able to attend the conference, and it was an eye-opening experience for them because it really allowed them to share their story. And some of them didn't know that they had a story because they're just so used to struggling or just in the moment, if that makes sense. And it really gave them the opportunity to speak to our congressmen and women, our legislators, and let them know what's in your community, in your neighborhood, and these are the issues that I deeply care about. Moving fast forward, we recently did a presentation at the Indiana Public Health Association for their fall policy conference to discuss basically what Results is doing and what Circles is doing and also about domestic violence in Indiana. And I'm trying to think. And recently we also had representatives from Senator Donnelly, Carson, Susan Brooks' office to come to our Circles meeting where we meet on Thursday evening at Tabernacle Presbyterian Church to basically have I don't want to call it a town hall, but have an opportunity to speak to them and see what our representatives are actually doing in Congress and how they are helping our community. And also, we are working on storytelling videos for our Circle leaders to share their stories so we can use that publicity. Hello? Hello?
Thanks, Yervonne. That's great.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry. I didn't realize I was muted. I muted the cop. Yervonne, thank you so much for sharing that. And one of the things that's so powerful is when folks can, you know, we can make these issues real. When folks would have expertise about the impact of EITC and the child tax credit or the impact of SNAP, when folks have that expertise because they themselves have participated in those programs and they're sharing that expertise directly with policymakers in the way that Yervonne described is really pretty amazing. So I love that we're hearing from several of our young leaders through the Real Change program, but also is one of the places where we've been able to kind of work specifically with Circles leaders, these amazing low-income advocates to make sure that their voices and their stories are heard. So with that, Josh, you want to walk through, before we go to some questions, you want to walk through some of our goals in terms of our grassroots work in 2015?
Sure. So we also have, in addition to our legislative goals or our legislative campaigns, we have grassroots goals that we want to accomplish next year. And, you know, this is how we're going to help create the political will to accomplish the things that Meredith talked about in her section in 2015. So as you can look, I'm going to go through these pretty quick. And certainly if you have any questions about them, feel free to email me or give me a call. But in 2015, we're looking to increase our number of domestic groups from 35 to 43, up our activists, from 240, regular activists to 275. And that means we want to get to represent 40 states and 160 House districts in 2015. We also want to increase the number of face-to-face meetings. As Joanne said, this was a record year for y'all getting face-to-face meetings, and so we want to build on that and get up to at least 127 face-to-face meetings, which would be 92 House meetings and 35 Senate meetings. And certainly we welcome you, breaking that record. For the media, we're looking to go from 119, which is where we are right now, to 129. I don't think that's going to be too heavy a lift for y'all because y'all have proven to be so great at getting media published. Even though our media this year was not as high as last year, which we were, 143, I believe, this is still the second highest year of media success y'all have had in the last decade. So you definitely have something to be proud of. Another big one for us is we want to increase the domestic presence at the international conference. You know, we've averaged around 35 to 40 people the last few years. We had 37 this year, representing 67% of our groups. We want to hit 50 this year, at least 50 people. This is existing volunteers. It doesn't count Real Change people. It doesn't count new people. This is existing volunteers, the folks that are on the phone today. 50 people coming to the IC at representing at least 75% of our groups. And then finally, we want to increase, obviously, results to our communities, inviting new people to get involved with us. That'll help us get those new activists, as well as fundraising and building the financial support for results. So we hope to have 125 outreach and or fundraising events and have at least 40% of our groups next year doing fundraising. We had about 27% this year. So we look forward to working with all of y'all to help accomplish and shatter these goals next year. And like I said, if you have any questions about them, please feel free to get in contact with me. So, Meredith?
Great. Thanks, Josh. So with that, why don't we open it up if folks have additional strategies you would suggest about these campaigns, questions. We wanted to have a few minutes to interact. So if you have, if you'd like to jump on the call, hit *1 and the operator will unmute you. Anthony, we have anyone?
Thank you, Ms. Dodson. We do. The first of which comes from Santa Fe.
This is Lydia Pendley. My question is anything apt to happen this next year with the universal pre-K? And will there be a bill in Congress, and is this something that we ought to also have on the agenda?
Yeah, so, and many folks know, but anyone who's new, Results has a long history of working on kind of birth to five policies or really, prenatal to five policies, and including advocacy for Head Start and early Head Start and child care and also specifically supporting the universal pre-K proposals. And just attention on this because the president had a big summit. And if you want more details about some of the business community members who are involved in that or just more about the summit, at the White House this past week. You can go to investinus.org. Quite honestly, I think the elections mean that, and it's because it's identified as an administrative proposal, I don't think we're going to see any real opportunity to move anything forward with early childhood and specifically around universal pre-K. I think there is some momentum specifically around home visiting and around certainly Congress has to do something around the Children's Health Insurance Program, for instance. But it's kind of deliberate where I think it's not going to go. I mean, quite candidly, nothing's going to go anywhere in the next 2 years on the expansion of pre-K or some of the other president's other early childhood initiatives. So there'll be rhetoric and, will you kind of continue to support that? But there's not really any tangible opportunity. So that's why it's not something we're seriously engaged in. That being said, I do think that we will see the reintroduction of what's called the Strong Start for America's Children Act. We need new lead, and there might be already new lead members of Congress identified to introduce that, since two early childhood champions, Senator Tom Harkin and Representative George Miller, are both retiring. But, and that's legislation we support. But on a practical level, I don't think we're going to see anything moving forward.
Strong Start for America's Children Act.
Oh. Yeah. Anyone else, Anthony?
Yes, Ms. Dodson. That comes from Aurora.
Okay, hi there. We have Marty or Jim or someone else in Aurora.
Aurora, your line is open.
You got to unmute, though. And let me say for anyone, including those guys, if there's questions you don't get a chance to ask today, feel free to shoot me an email or give me a call once I'm back in D.C. On Monday. Someone else, Anthony?
No, ma'am, not at this time.
Okay, great. Well, again, if folks have questions, please do follow up. Really excited about next year. We're continuing to plan out more of the specifics, and a lot of it's going to be waiting to see what happens with tax proposals and how early they move on that, with budget proposals, and kind of in particular, quite honestly, I think we'll have a busy spring where we might see several things go to the president and then get vetoed, and then kind of the second round of work in the summer that might even correspond, kind of perfectly with when people would be on Capitol Hill during our results conference as there's continued negotiation. So it is going to be a busy year, and your work is going to be incredibly important. So thank you all for all that you do. Anthony, I'll give it one last quick opportunity. Anyone else jump in the queue?
Okay. With any final questions or comments, press star one on your keypad. We'll pause just a moment. There are none, Ms. Dodson.
All right. Well, then why don't we go to Christy for some closing announcements. Christy, are you there?
You guys hear me?
Yep.
All right, great. So hello, everyone. Just want to let you know our next national conference call is Saturday Eastern. And remember, in January, we'll do the group planning. And like last year, we will devote some time on the January conference call to group planning. We'll have more details after the holidays. But before you leave today, plan where your group will meet on January 10th to listen to the call and then do group planning. Schedule yourself plenty of time to finish your planning that day, if at all possible, and urge everyone in your group to be there. If not, make sure those who are absent can share their 2015 planning ideas with your group leader before that call. We'll have our 2015 group planning materials available on the Results Group Resources page and more information about group planning in the coming weeks, so look out for that. Remember that the 2015 Results International Conference is July 18th through 21st, 2015, in Washington, D.C. Be sure to include attending the conference in your group plans next month as well. And registration for that conference will begin in January. And this is the season of giving, and we hope you will include results and or results educational funds in your year-end giving plans. Your financial contribution makes possible all the work we do and allows us to support you in being the great advocates you are. And all donations made until the end of this year will be matched dollar for dollar up to $50,000. So this gives you the chance to double your financial impact. Go to results.org/donate to make your donation today. Also, encourage people you know to get involved with results. invite them to attend our final intro call of 2014 this Friday, December 19th at 1 p.m. Eastern, and you can find the link to that intro call registration form. Also, results, U.S. Poverty Free Agents will be having their final support call of 2014 next week. This call is Tuesday, December 16th at 1 p.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern. The call-in number is 857-232-0476, passcode 703-096. And as Joanne mentioned earlier, we're so excited that our February 2015 conference call guest will be Nicholas Kristof. And again, this will be a joint call with our global poverty volunteers, and we'll be using this event as an opportunity to invite new people to get involved with results. And we'll have more details for you after the holidays, but for now, save the date, Saturday, February 14th, Valentine's Day at 2 p.m. Eastern. And you can find these events and others on our results events calendar on the results website. And finally, we hope all of you have a very wonderful holiday season and a very happy new year. Please note that all results offices will be closed December 25th through January 1st, and results U.S. poverty staff will be on vacation from December 20th through January 4th. Until then, wishing you all happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays.
Ho, ho, ho!
Hey, Anthony, why don't you open up all the lines and let everybody wish each other a happy holiday?
Happy holidays, everyone.
Okay, Minnesota, stay on the line. Constance, hang up for just a minute.
I only do paper calendars.
You know what? I do,
and I left mine.
Say it straight, because I'd much rather prefer working with him in that way.